We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
And did what Swaggy P do. Teammates played great, and we came out with the victory, you know?
I'm trying to really get my NBA 2K rating up.
I just can't take it.
You know, it's 12:02 right now. If they want to fire me at 12:05, I'll go home and find something to do. I'll have a good day.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Thursday, February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. Nick Whalen, I usually would say here with James Anderson on Thursday, but as you can probably tell already from the audio quality, we are doing this via Skype. James, you are at some exotic location about, what, a mile and a quarter from the office in Madison?
Yeah, I am doing this from home, so...
On strike?
I refuse to be in the same room as... as somebody that plays for a rec league team that is now 1-3 on the season.
Oh my, I don't even want to get into that. I tweeted a little bit about it last night. There was somebody on the other team who looked like, he literally looked exactly like Deli in the face. Didn't have a mouth guard though, which you kind of diminish the effect a little bit, but looked like him a ton, and then had ASIC shoes, kind of, I wouldn't even call them like mid-calf socks. They were like somewhere between tube socks and like normal socks, kind of like Jabari Parker type of socks, pulled up as high as they could be, no logo. You know, just kind of generic clothing. And I'm like, this guy looks like Deli. And he played exactly like Deli. He took two charges. One was ruled a charge. One was ruled a block. I don't even think he scored, but he had like at least seven assists, a bunch of jump stops, a lot of really nice fundamental plays. And we lost. I don't even know what the final score is, but we lost by at least 25. So Team RotoWire is coming off of a second straight, pretty humiliating defeat in the Madison Rec League.
Yeah, I never know what to think when I see a guy wearing like running shoes, like clear non-basketball shoes. I feel like 10% of the time they're really good, and like 70% of the time they're terrible.
Usually you're like, okay, this is a good sign. This guy clearly has not played basketball recently. But yeah, sometimes it's kind of like, wow, you have the confidence to play in a rec league game that's fairly competitive in those shoes. Like, you must be pretty good, because there's two guys on our team that are pretty good who wear running shoes. So. You know, it's just one of those things. Like, I think as you get older, that's becoming more and more common, I'm noticing, in these rec leagues. But we should note, you were not there last night, so you are not responsible at all for what I would say was Team RotoWire's worst thrashing of all time.
Yeah, I think there's a correlation there for sure. Mm-hmm. that you guys were beaten so thoroughly without me.
Yeah. I mean, there's no two ways about it. We'll come back. I mean, like I said last night, the All-Star break couldn't come at a better time for us. I think we'll regroup. We need this week off, and when we get back, it's going to be kind of pedal to the metal. Okay, we have a few things we want to get to. We're going to do midseason awards. I think we're the only podcast that's doing that. I haven't really seen that anywhere else. So we'll be the first ones to pick MVP, Most Improved, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, Defensive Player. We'll revisit some of our over-unders now that we're at the All-Star break. Most teams have around 25-ish, you know, closer to 30 for some teams, games remaining. So we'll kind of get a better look at where we are with those picks back from October. And then we'll talk a little bit about All-Star weekend, of course. But we'll start at the top with the awards races. MVP, give me your – I think there's a consensus top three at this point, right? Is that fair to say? If you're a rational basketball fan and you have to write your top three choices in some order, it's Harden, Giannis, and Paul George?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so what is your order?
It is Harden, Giannis, Paul George.
Okay, I agree. That's what I have as well. I think the gap between Giannis and Harden has closed over the last like 2.5 weeks. Giannis has been ridiculous in the month of February. His true shooting is over 70%. He's starting to hit threes every now and then. He's rebounding at an even higher rate. He's been just as good defensively. But at the same time, Harden hasn't really slowed down at all. So like I don't know if it's necessarily fair to penalize Harden, I guess. I mean, he's continuing. I think he had 31 straight games after last night with at least 30 points. But I think, you know, as we've talked about every year when we have this discussion, narrative is what's also like ultimately going to decide this. And I think, you know, Giannis started the season with the narrative. Harden probably controlled it from, you know, the start of January through, you know, maybe the last couple of weeks. And I feel like it might start to kind of swing back in favor of Giannis if the Bucks, who have still not lost back-to-back games, if they finish this season with like 62, 63 wins and Giannis plays, you know, 77 games and continues playing the way he is, you know, they might finish 15 games better than Houston. And I think at that point, even though Harden might be averaging 37 points per game, it's going to make it a really, really close debate.
Well, let me ask you this. If James Harden had zero MVPs, how close would this race be?
That's a very good question. I think you have to factor that in as well. I mean, even if he had won it not last season, you know, if he had won one 4 years ago, I think that would help his case. But I mean, the argument against winning it back to back is you have to top what you did the previous season. And for so many guys, like Russ is the greatest example. Like there was just no possible way he could ever top that season, both statistically and from a theatric standpoint. That was a year after Durant left. So he had like arguably the best MVP narrative we've ever seen on his side. He had a bunch of game winners. At that point, he was kind of the only guy for that team. That was before Paul George, of course. But there was nothing he could really do to top that the year after, even though he averaged a triple-double again. The thing with Harden is that he is topping last season, like by a pretty significant amount. So I do agree with you that him winning it last year kind of inherently diminishes his chances. But it's not like he's, you know, last year he finished averaging 30.4 points per game, 8.8 assists. It's not like he's coming back this year and averaging 31.5 points per game and, you know, 9 assists, where it's marginally better. Like he is averaging over 6 more points per game in, you know, roughly the same amount of playing time. He's better efficiency wise. You know, it's kind of, to me, that kind of almost offsets because he's been so much better this year that, you know, I don't know that he gets the normal penalty, quote unquote, that the guy who won it last year does.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be some Harden fatigue.
I think there already is, weirdly enough.
Right. I mean, like when it's time to cast votes, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a decent amount of people that are kind of going to say like, well, I'm breaking the tie by giving it to the guy whose team's got more wins. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's really tough because I think all three of these guys are having better years than, you know, a handful of MVPs from the past decade or
so. Steve Nash.
you know, I think that it's kind of, you know, like the Bucks in like a normal year without the Warriors, the Bucks would be like the favorites to win the finals, you know, and,
yes.
And that's obviously not the case this year. Paul George, you know, having an awesome, awesome year. Just the fact that he's doing all this while also being a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, you know, it's a really tough call. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but I just think that what Harden's doing is a slight notch above. in terms of degree of difficulty and just the context of what he's doing. I mean, like the Bucks are built just perfectly around Giannis to kind of make everything as easy for him as possible. And the Rockets have been playing some guys that just should not be playing in NBA games. Hey, and Harden's still kind of carrying this team to a playoff berth.
Kenneth Reed has been a monster. How dare you say that? What can Giannis do? Like, is there anything he can do to close the gap in your mind, or would it be more about Harden kind of regressing back, you know, as we get more and more into the season with Chris Paul, maybe that scoring sinks back, you know, to like 33 points per game or 34, which is still a ridiculous season. Like, is it more about, you know, Harden cooling off, or is there anything Giannis can do? You know, how much does wins factor into this? I mean, what has to change, you know, after the All-Star break to change your opinion on this?
Yeah, I think it's probably Harden falling back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if the Bucks kind of keep playing the sort of exact way they've been playing for the past month or so, then they're going to, you know, they're going to be at 63, 64, yep, maybe even 65 wins. And then if Harden, you know, if he's only like a 30 point per game guy the rest of the way, that's, you know, big enough drop off from what he was doing, right, I think, to kind of put Giannis in the driver's seat. But that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that right now, either somebody who's averaging almost 37 points a game, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and shooting 38% from 3, or a guy who's averaging 27, 13, 6, and a combined 3 steals and blocks, and basically putting up Shaq efficiency numbers, isn't going to win the MVP.
Yeah, it's really nuts. You know, I think Giannis, if he doesn't win it this year, will enter next year as just the heavy, 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 yes, favorite. It'll be kind of all he would have to do is just kind of hold serve next year, and then he would get it as kind of like a makeup, like, yep, a do good award. But
I think, I think Harden in some ways kind of got that last year. He deserved it, of course, but I think, yeah, he was due. You know, I think he had finished second, what, 2 or 3 straight years before that.
Right. And, you know, I mean, how much do you think, like, is Giannis a top 5 defensive player in the league to you? Like, is he a top 10? Like, how
certainly
much?
Top 10. I mean, it kind of depends how you want to quantify defense, but I think, yeah, I think there's a case that he's top 5. I think he's for sure in the top 10. I don't know about Harden.
I think any case for Giannis, like, if you want to make a really compelling case for Giannis over Harden, I would make it with defense more so than team success, just because I think there's a lot of factors at play that go into his team success that aren't necessarily his doing, whereas his defense is just so so much of a separator between him and Harden that that's probably, mm-hmm, where I would make the case.
So how far behind is Paul George behind those two right now?
Not super far, but I don't really know what he could do to pass them.
Yeah.
I think, do you think Paul George is closer to Giannis or closer to whoever you have for it?
Ooh, well, that was going to be my next question is, you know, what's kind of tier 3? I think Harden and Giannis are tier 1. Paul George is kind of by himself in tier 2. And then, you know, there's maybe 3 to 5 guys you could put below him. I think right now, after the last like 3 weeks that Paul George has had, he's closer to Giannis and Harden to me than he is to Jokic or Kawhi or KD or Embiid.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I would have Jokic fourth.
I think so too. I mean, I it's tough. I mean, Kawhi's going to miss too many games. I mean, I think Denver and Toronto are kind of mirror images of each other in terms of how they're going to finish record-wise. You know, they have a lot of really good supporting pieces, but one clear star, obviously, being Jokic and Kawhi. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I think Kawhi's missed too many games. I think there's just too many good players ahead of Jokic. I mean, we can basically cross off KD at this point, right? I mean, I think we said back in October that for KD or for Curry to win it, there need to be a couple of injuries. There needs to be, you know, maybe one other type of development. For example, Anthony Davis, you know, what's happened with that. And that team needs to win 60 plus games. And if you look right now, heading into the All-Star break, they're only on pace for 58. And I don't think that Warriors roster can get an MVP unless you win 60 games and maybe even closer to 65.
Yeah, I still think that they are going to warrant down ballot voting at the end of the year. Like, I would probably, to me, it's really tough to determine who is having a better year out of Curry and Durant, but I would probably put one of those guys fifth after Jokic. But mm-hmm. yeah, I don't see them realistically winning the award.
All right, so humor me. What does LeBron have to do to get back in this?
Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think that I can't even imagine at this point. I don't even think that's bettable right now if we wanted to. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I think this next 2 months or so will be very interesting. I still think Harden's the clubhouse leader. I think Giannis is a very close second, and I think PG is a very close third. And it's interesting that we have this consensus top three. And Zach Lowe on the Low Post this week was talking about this. Like, it's going to get pretty heated, I think, down the last few weeks. I mean, the Bucks are one of those teams that's pretty forward-thinking marketing-wise. There's going to be a huge push to get Giannis the MVP, especially as they keep winning. We know what Daryl Morey's been willing to do in the past for this. And two very deserving candidates are going to end up getting left out, and it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Most improved player. These are the players that I just wrote down looking up and down the standings just off the top of my head. Please let me know if I forgot anybody. Pascal Siakam, Montrezl Harrell, Monte Morris. I even wrote the question mark on my notes because I don't know if he belongs in there. Both De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, John Collins, D'Angelo Russell, Justice Winslow. Am I forgetting anybody?
Nobody that I would put in like my top three or anything like that.
Okay. Well, what do you have a top three?
I do. And I'm struggling with the order of this, but I think in some order it's Siakam, De'Aaron Fox, and D'Angelo Russell.
I agree with that. I think with Harrell, you can kind of make the case that it's a little more, you know, like just increase in role. You know, he's, which is in the past, honestly, has kind of led to a lot of guys winning this award. But he was averaging 17 minutes a game last year. And at the beginning of the year was, you know, a complete unknown who was a throw in from Houston in the Chris Paul deal. I mean, I don't even think anyone thought he would really be like a legit rotation piece. He's averaging basically 10 more minutes per game. His usage is way up, all that. The advanced stats love Harrell. I think he belongs in there. But I feel like there's bigger names out there. All three guys that you mentioned, you know, I think which will kind of leapfrog Harrell. Numbers wise, Siakam's numbers, I was looking at this last night. He scored, I think, what, 42 or 43 last night. He had a career high. His numbers aren't quite as good as I thought. He's at 16 points, 7 rebounds, little under 3 assists, 1.7 steals and blocks, you know, 55% from the field, just 34% from three. I mean, he's a guy that I think when you watch him, it's very clear how good he is. But I think there's like a slight chance that nationally he might be, you know, dinged a little bit just because the numbers don't exactly leap off the page. You know, he's kind of more of a tough guy to quantify, you know, how much he helps you.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to really love these kinds of players where it's kind of the sum of the parts, and just the fact that he doesn't have any weaknesses at all. And he can be kind of, you know, he scored over 40 points. I don't think anyone would have seen that coming. But
he plays, especially, it's so hard for someone that plays that way to score 40 plus points. Yeah, he's not just ISOing 20 times a game.
He's so low usage. You know, yeah. he either gets the ball and, you know, just kind of attacks the basket and scores if he thinks he has the advantage, or he just quickly passes it. Like you don't see him just sitting around kind of dribbling and not really having a plan. And you know, I think he's worked really, really hard to be someone that is a capable corner three-point shooter. He's obviously very versatile defensively. You don't have to really run any plays for him. And, yeah, I mean, those are the types of players that every team would just love to have as many of them as possible. And I think that he's going to have kind of a national coming out party in the postseason this year. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think he's deserving. But those other two guys are just as deserving.
To put that in context, he has a lower usage rate than Marco Bellinelli. He has a lower usage rate than Jamichael Green, and a lower usage rate this season than Carmelo Anthony, who will hopefully get a glimpse of this weekend in the celebrity game. I think that's actually tomorrow night.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. Yeah.
Lower usage rate than Dirk. How is this possible?
I'm telling you, man.
Is Dirk selfish?
There needs to be some sort of, yeah, it's just to be as productive as he is, yeah, with as low of a usage rate as he is, like, to me, that just makes his statistics kind of pop a little bit in a way that it's tough to sort of quantify.
Yeah, I'll run the numbers on that later. I think Basketball Reference lets you search by usage. Like, guys who have reached those averages with that low of usage has got to be very few. Fox and Heald, I mean, there might be a chance that those two like cancel each other out just being on the same team. I mean, they've both made pretty huge leaps. I feel like Fox would probably get the nod over Heald just because he, you know, Heald's been in the league a little bit longer. Like Fox going from 11.6 points last season to 17 this year, huge jump in efficiency, both from the field and from three. And obviously the team success is probably the biggest driver for him. So I think like Fox and Russell to me are pretty close. You know, Heald's right there. John Collins was a name I mentioned. I mean, he's only in his second year. He missed a ton of time to begin the year. Hawks are going to finish with 20 some fewer wins than the Kings and, you know, significantly fewer than Toronto. So he's probably out. But yeah, I think right now it's got to be Siakam, right? If you took a straw poll, it'd probably be like 70%+ Siakam.
Well, I was going to say like, it's really tough. And I think it kind of matters like what type of most improved player are you partial to? Because, you know, Fox, I think, is the best of these players. And
yes.
He's, you know, to have that improvement specifically from in 3-point efficiency just completely changes the arc of the Sacramento organization. But it's also a high pedigree guy just making a leap from first year to second year that we sometimes see. I mean, do you want to reward that, or do you want to reward like Siakam's kind of on that very gradual rise up into like borderline all-star consideration? And then D'Angelo Russell, I think, is actually my favorite type of most improved player, where it's, you know, some pretty lean years early on, and then something clicks and he makes this big jump and kind of actualizes the potential that we saw for him a few years ago. So I'm not going to give it to Siakam just yet. I mean, I think all three of those guys have really, really strong cases, and it might come down to just who finishes better.
I almost wrote down Paul George on my list. There are very few examples of a player. There were basically like three examples, maybe two, of a player that old winning this award. He would also become the first two-time winner of the Most Improved Player Award, which would be kind of cool. But no, I think there are too many strong candidates. I mean, this has been an award that it seems like some years there are 10 guys you could give it to. Other years, there's just one clear candidate. Like Oladipo last year, I'm going to pull up the voting. That had to be close to unanimous, right?
Oh, yeah. That was a...
So there were 101 first-place votes. He got 99. Clint Capella got one. Spencer Dinwiddie got one. Which sounds about right. But yeah, I mean, it's very rare for most improved player to be over 25 years old. There's only like seven. And there's only one most improved player ever who's been over 29 years old. Do you know the only 30-year-old most improved player in NBA history?
Can you give me a...
Pretty random guy. 1998-99. Point guard for an Eastern Conference team. Really good on NBA Live. Does that help?
Terrell Brandon?
Very close. Definitely in that same vein. Daryl Armstrong. I don't know how you didn't get that.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah, of course.
That was a lockout shortened year. You know, there's a lot going on. But the last, let's see, five have been all pretty big names. Oladipo, Giannis, McCollum, Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Paul George. Like, those are all guys who, you know, Dragic and McCollum maybe aren't superstars, but four out of those six guys are, like, perennial all-star, all-NBA caliber players, which is interesting.
I mean, you have to look at that. Like, I looked at that when I was making the preseason prediction. Mm-hmm. You have to look at a guy that's kind of trending towards all-star caliber.
And that's where Russell, I think, probably makes his case.
Right.
Yeah. But it's weird. Like, if you look even further back, there's a run of, like, really good role players. Like, Aaron Brooks, Danny Granger, Hedo Turkoglu somehow won it at age 28. Monte Ellis, Boris Diaw, Bobby Simmons. Like, none of those guys were superstars. So it kind of goes in cycles. Coach of the Year. Who are your top three or four candidates?
Well, I think it's got to go to Budenholzer.
Yep.
It's really a dramatic. It helps that he's following a guy as bad as Jason Kidd, but it's still just a crazy.
they should split the award, like Jason Kidd for making the Bucks as bad as they were to help Bud look this good.
Right. I think Mike Malone should get consideration. Yep. I think Greg Popovich should get consideration. Jaeger in Sacramento should get.
Who would have thought that, like, 3 weeks in when it seemed like days away or hours away from being fired?
I wanted to give it to him. Like, he was my coach of the year through like a month because it just was so improbable what he was doing.
Yeah.
But now it's sort of, you know, I would feel better rewarding the Kings by giving De'Aaron Fox most improved player than giving Jaeger coach of the year. But, you know, I might vote Popovich second here just because I think looking at his roster, it's just, it's complete witchcraft what he's doing with those guys. But I think Budenholzer has to get it.
Yeah, well, anybody who has Bryn Forbes can win 45 games. Come on. if the Kings make the playoffs, this should just be renamed the Dave Jaeger Award going forward.
Well, yeah. If the Kings make the playoffs, he should get it. Just to, I mean,
yeah. We'll present him with a separate Coach of the Year Award if he doesn't win this one. Okay, sixth man. Here's the list of names that I wrote down, again, off the top of my head. Ersan Ilyasova, obviously. Spencer Dinwiddie, Domantas Sabonis, Lewis Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Derrick Rose.
All right. I think it's, for me, it's between Sabonis and Lou Williams. And I mean, I don't really have a strong take either way.
Yeah. Is it possible for there to be voter fatigue on Lou Williams?
Oh, sure. I mean, this, the sixth man award, typically, like, there's one guy like every 5 years that is in consideration every single year.
I mean, we were joking about Jaeger, but like, they literally should rename this the Lou Williams Award if he wins it again. This would be his third. Well, Jamal Crawford's got three too. Yeah. I don't know.
It's how tough. How many does Manu Ginobili have?
Manu?
Yeah.
He's got one. But he's kind of the Greg Popovich of this award. Like, he could have won it every year from 2005 through like 2015.
Right.
J.R. Smith's got one.
But yeah, I mean, I think Sabonis is interesting just because he was, to me, he's like either the second or the third best player on a team that's going to win like 47 games.
Yeah.
Lou Williams is, you know, just the finisher on a team that's in the playoff mix. So who do you lean with there?
I think it's going to depend on how these teams finish. Like, if Indiana finishes strong and Sabonis is a big part of the reason they're able to hang on to like the fourth or fifth spot. If they finish fourth, I think that really helps them a lot. I think Dinwiddie was probably in the driver's seat for this for a while, but it depends how much time he's going to miss. Although his injury kind of came at an okay time because he at least gets the All-Star break, you know, to save a week's worth of missed games. But if he plays well down the stretch and the Nets make a little bit of a charge up the standings, I think he'll be in there. I don't think Derrick Rose is winning it. I think Minnesota's going to be, like, the luster's kind of worn off that. Like, he had that really nice run, that 50-point game, I think back in early November. But since then, it's kind of worn off a little bit. Just for, like, the sake of history, I guess I'd like Lou Williams to win it, go back-to-back. I'm trying to see. That has not happened since 1991-92, Detlef Schrempf, of course. And that would also give the Clippers four six-man award winners in 6 years. And the two guys who were not on the Clippers would be Lou Williams and Eric Gordon, who were previously on the Clippers or currently on the Clippers.
Wow, it's six-man university.
Okay, Defensive Player of the Year. I really don't know where to go with this one. It feels like, from what you read and hear, like, Paul George is kind of the clubhouse leader here. And obviously that's a big reason why he's in the MVP debate as well. I think Miles Turner, just based on his blocks numbers, is going to get some love there. Pacers have been good on defense. I think Rudy Gobert, obviously, is always there. You have to mention Kawhi, but as is the case with MVP, I think he just missed too many games. So my top three right now are Paul George, Gobert, and Miles Turner.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a regular season award, and I would give it to Rudy Gobert just because I think he has the most defensive impact during the regular season. Mm-hmm. In the postseason, I would much prefer to have someone with Paul George or Kawhi Leonard's abilities, just because I think that it's a lot tougher for a big man like Gobert to impact a series on that end of the ball. But just for the regular season, I just think that he's lifted that Jazz team to heights just with his defense. That, I mean, if you just replaced Rudy Gobert with, I mean, who's like a, even, you know, just
Johnny
someone
O'Brien.
Like, if you replaced just his defense, like, you keep his offense, if you just replace his defense,
so he's like, he's playing all-time O
and it's like DeAndre Jordan playing defense. Ooh. Instead, like, they might have like the same record as the Pelicans. Since that's been that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz, they didn't start off the season all that well defensively. They're up to fourth now in defensive rating. I think they've been first since probably around Christmas. So that certainly helps. I mean, Giannis is going to get some consideration, right? The Bucks are first in defensive rating as a team. He is first in the league in defensive win shares and first in the league in defensive box plus minus. Gobert is right behind him in both of those categories, though.
Where does Brooke Lopez come in anywhere in there?
Among qualified players, he is 12th in defensive win shares, and he is a little bit lower in box plus minus, closer to like mid-30s.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he's kind of the engine of that defense, but I think that guys like George, guys like Gobert are in a different tier than Giannis for me. That doesn't mean that he's not an awesome defender. I don't see him changing games on that end of the court that often. He's just really good and he's very versatile.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think what he does doesn't necessarily translate to like defensive player of the year criteria. A little bit tougher to quantify. Do you have any thoughts on executive of the year? I just kind of threw this in as a fun one. It's usually like, I think they kind of base it on like who makes the best moves the previous off season, right? Or in season moves, I guess too.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I still think it's Masai.
Yep.
But John Forrest, like that, you know, that team really, with the exception of the Ersan signing, couldn't have been put together any better. And getting Budenholzer in there, but I would still give it to Masai just for what they did with getting Kawhi. And, you know, they were able to add guys like Kawhi and Marcus Gasol while keeping all of their blue chip young players on the roster, which is just a massive accomplishment.
Yeah, I think getting Kawhi is like the single biggest coup. And you don't count the Lakers getting LeBron. I don't think anyone really gives the Lakers front office any credit for that.
I think the Lakers front office should get like consideration for
terrible.
Worst performance this year. And that, like, I just don't give them any credit for getting LeBron, and I give them all the credit for all the other stuff.
I forget, some podcast I was listening to earlier this week said, you know, I think Magic's going to resign this summer. And I agree, because Magic said he's going to resign this summer if he doesn't get the Lakers turnaround by the end of, I don't know what, he didn't give a specific date, but I guess by the end of free agency this summer. And I don't think whatever they're going to do this summer is going to count as them getting turned around. Because it's been pretty much an unmitigated disaster since he took over. Would you say it's fair to say he traded their two best picks, like their two best lottery picks of like the post Kobe era in Randall and Russell, or is Ingram or Kuzma or Ball more valuable than either of those guys?
Well, Russell's definitely their best. That the Zubac trade doesn't make any sense at all either.
Hey, Mike, you got to get Mike Muscala, man.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Julius Randle, I love Julius Randle. I don't necessarily think he's any better than the guys that are still on that roster. But D'Angelo Russell, I mean, that was...
That trade with the Pelicans gets done if it's D'Angelo Russell instead of Lonzo Ball or instead of Kyle Kuzma, right?
You mean if it's Lonzo Ball instead of D'Angelo Russell?
I mean, the Lakers would still have Russell, and he'd be going to the Pelicans. Like you'd be sending a package of Russell, Ingram, and Kuzma in a first. Like that deal gets done with the Pelicans, right?
Well, if you assume that D'Angelo Russell develops the same way, like
that's what I'm assuming. I'm saying this version of D'Angelo Russell is on the Lakers.
But I also don't think that you can assume that because I don't. I think it was really good for Russell to get out of there, and it looks bad. I mean, it looks bad that he was the asset they attached to get rid of Mozgov when it really probably could have been any of those young guys, but it's just, we don't know for sure that he turns into the same player. But yeah, I think the Pelicans would do something based around this version of D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. Well, and we said this at the time, it all goes back to those Deng and Mozgov signings. Like they like preemptively screwed themselves by making those signings, having to give up assets to get off of those guys or take up cap space, you know, in Deng's situation. And, you know, obviously they couldn't have foreseen this Davis situation coming, maybe, or even LeBron being there 2-3 years later. But, you know, those deals, which I think were like the last transactions of the pre-Magic era, in a lot of ways, you know, I wouldn't say set up Magic to fail, but put him a little bit behind the eight ball, I guess, before he even started.
So if Magic does not resign this summer, are you going to call him a liar?
I'm going to hold him accountable. Yes. Yes. It's like that. I've not seen this movie, but I heard there's a movie last year called Three Billboards where, right, like some, like a girl was like murdered or missing and her mom put up, you know, like, why is nobody searching for her? How come? That's what I'll be doing in LA. I'm sure billboards in downtown LA are super affordable. So I'll just rent out three of those and then off we go.
Well, you could put them up in like rural Wisconsin and take photos of them.
Oh man. Yeah. 29 wins. How come? No Anthony Davis. Okay. I'm going to talk about DraftKings real quick and then we'll get into revisiting over unders, which is a process that I'm not exactly looking forward to based on some of the picks that I made a few months ago. But as we've said on this podcast all season long, we're partnered up with DraftKings.com, which if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you know quite a bit about them. But if you go to rotowire.com/DraftKings, rotowire.com/DraftKings, you can get a free 6-month subscription to our website. All you have to do is make a deposit of at least $10 on DraftKings.com. Then you'll have access to everything that we offer: DFS lineup optimizers, weekly rankings, premium articles, full season draft software. We'll even send you a PDF version of our baseball mag, which we just got last week. It's really, really good. James put a ton of hard work into that. You get all that for $10, and then you can use that money, most importantly, to win even more money on DraftKings.com. Again, go to rotowire.com/DraftKings. Just follow the instructions on that page. rotowire.com/DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. New DraftKings users only. See DraftKings.com for details. Over-unders. I was a little bit reluctant to reopen this document. I knew there were some that I would regret. There were some others where, and I find myself doing this all the time, like usually it's in like March Madness or any other thing where you have to make picks, like fantasy football. I'm like rooting against someone or rooting for someone that I think is on or against my team. And then it turns out that they're either on my team or they're against my team. Like, for example, I was convinced for some reason that I took the under on Portland. I thought that you had talked me into the under, and I was relieved to see that I took the over on Portland, which is on pace for 49 wins. Their over under was 42.5. But we can start right at the top. We'll go alphabetically. We're not going to hit on everybody. But the Atlanta Hawks, 24 wins last year. The preseason number was 24.5. As we head into the All-Star break, they have 19 wins, although they do play tonight at home against the Knicks. So sadly, that's probably going to become 20. They're on pace for 27. I was hammering that under. I distinctly remember saying that I thought this was the worst NBA roster that I'd seen since that process Sixers team, which was, what, 2012 or 2013. And Trae Young's been better than I thought. You know, John Collins has made some strides. Their role players have been better than I thought. Kevin Huerter has kind of stepped in and looked like a really good player right away. And somebody you don't hear a lot about, Lloyd Pierce, I think he's not going to be in the coach of the year discussion by any means, but, you know, performance relative to roster talent and expectations, I think he's done just about as good of a job as you can imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Trae Young and Kevin Huerter both look like good picks. It's going to be interesting to kind of how we'll judge the Trae Young, Luka Doncic trade 10 years from now, just based on whoever the Hawks get with that draft pick. And I mean, Trae Young looks really awesome. It's just he's never going to be as good as Doncic, but, yeah, for a rookie point guard with his style of play to kind of lead a roster like this to even, you know, 22, 23 wins is pretty impressive.
This is a kind of a bad analogy. As soon as I say it, you'll know why. But it is a little like LeBron Melo or LeBron Wade, where, you know, Trae Young could have a very, very good career. You know, he could end up being a 7-time All-Star, but no matter what, it's just like it's not going to matter in the context of the guy who they should have taken, you know. And obviously, nobody else could have taken LeBron in 03 because he went one. But that's going to hang. Like, Trae Young, unless Doncic just falls off a cliff at some point, like, that's going to be hanging over, you know, I think Atlanta's front office and certainly like Trae Young personally for a while, right?
Well, I feel so bad for these guys. I saw like every time I see Trae Young get interviewed or every time I see DeAndre Ayton get interviewed, like one of the first questions is, you know, what about like the fact that Luka Doncic went like and he's been really good? And like I feel bad that they have to get compared to him. But yeah, it's I mean, it's not going to look great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we I guess we skipped over Rookie of the Year. I didn't even put that in the document because it's decided at this point. Right. I mean, unless for some reason Dallas, you know, goes into crazy rest mode and sits Doncic or he suffers an injury, even if he got injured, it would still be close. Like he could not play a game the rest of the way. And I don't know if he would, you know, if that would knock him out of the top spot for Rookie of the Year. So that's basically decided. But I wrote down a couple of my most regrettable picks and a couple of the picks that I'm most proud of. Do you have any that you would like to say before I go?
Yes. I mean, does the Kings one even count? I guess it does, but
it's on my list. Yeah. I mean, it's the Kings kind of duped us though, right? I mean, our rationale, I don't even remember really discussing this pick because we were like, it's the Kings. I know they look better on paper. Things seem to be turning around, but it's the Kings.
Yeah. I did that one. I was just so tough to see that coming, that I want to give us a pass, but I can't. That was bad. You know, one that really kind of stings me, well, two. I went over on the Wizards at 44.5, and to go over on a team at that number of wins and then have them be this level of a train wreck is kind of embarrassing.
I don't feel bad about that one. I went over too, but Dwight Howard hasn't played. This is a 60-win team with Dwight Howard.
I also just – I was telling you before we started recording – I went over on the Celtics at 58.5, and it, I mean, I know that the talent was there, but it was just such a sucker bet. Like that line was just too high. It was 5 wins lower than the Warriors over under. I feel like all the smart bettors were probably taking that under, just because Vegas put it so high because of all the crazy Celtics fans. And I was one of the suckers that also took the over. But
Sucker City.
Speaking of sucker bets, though, the one I'm most proud of is taking the Rockets under.
I was a sucker on that one. I went over. They won 65 last year. The number was 55.5 when we made our picks. They're at 33 right now. They're on pace for about 47 wins. So it's going to take a pretty big second half surge, which I don't see happening. Although I think they'll get closer to 50 because they were so bad for those first few weeks that'll kind of even out a little bit. But yeah, they're not going to get to 56.
No, they are not.
I don't know. I remember saying like, this team is not 9 games worse than last year's team. And I think, and this is something that you brought up a ton on that pod back in October, was it's not necessarily that they're 9 games worse. It's that they overachieved last year. And now you kind of have to meet in the middle when you start looking at this year's over under.
Right, and just that the top heavy nature of their roster, mm-hmm. like all it was going to take is for, you know, something to go wrong with any of those guys, and just the depth behind them wasn't there to make it for it.
How much do they regret that Marquise Chris trade, do you think? he just erupted for 23 and 6 fouls last night.
Was that in the G League or what?
Basically, Cleveland.
Okay.
That's a triple overtime game. He managed to foul out in 28 minutes.
Marquise Chris is at that stage of his career where you're going to have to preface all your comments about him by telling me which team he's on.
He really is teetering on the edge. Like, it's rare that he's 21 years old. And would it surprise you at all if he was not on an NBA roster next year? I might be surprised if he is.
No, I mean, you could tell me that he was on any NBA roster and I'd believe you. And you could tell me he was in any G League team and I'd believe you. I mean, he's just very much a rambling man at this point.
He's got to be the Vegas favorite right now to be the next Andre Blotch and within 5 years become a naturalized citizen of the Philippines.
All right.
Did you know Andre Blotch? I was looking this up the other day as one. I was just doing my monthly Andre Blotch news sweep. He negotiated a contract in the Philippines that forbade him from practicing. Like, he signed something that said, I never have to practice. And the team was just okay with that.
Nice. That sounds like a pretty competitive league.
Well, you know, it depends. I'm not playing over there, so I'm not going to speak on it. All right, my worst picks. The one I feel the worst about, like I said, Sacramento's on that list, but they hoodwinked us. That's on them, not us. Chicago. You took the under and locked it in. I took the over and locked it in. And looking back, I don't know what I was thinking. This number was 28.5. They won 27 last year, and they currently have 14 wins. So it's not out of the question. You know, they could, you know, they could maybe run the table and make this a close one, but they're on pace for 21 wins. I think I saw last year's number and thought, you know, they're going to get a full season of Chris Dunn. You know, I like the player Zach LaVine. We were pretty high on Wendell Carter, and it was clear like a game and a half into the season that was going to hit, that under was going to hit.
Yeah, there's always a couple unders that just hit real big, you know, mm-hmm. and the Bulls are one.
The Suns are another.
I'd love to go back and listen to that pod and try to hear your reasoning on that, because I can't believe you took that.
If we had more time, I would go back and like splice out, you know, what I said about the Suns or what I said about the Bulls. I honestly don't even want to go back and listen.
Well, and
I'm sure I made a compelling case.
I think even more so than the Bulls one being completely obvious, like after the first two games of the season, I think the Cavs under, if you go back, like anyone that bet, because I remember, like I listened to a handful of like over-under podcasts before the season, and I remember like some people making cases that the Cavs were going to go over because – you know, they wanted to show LeBron that they could still make the playoffs and stuff like that. And
Dan Gilbert said that, right? Like he wanted this to be like a 7 or 8 seed team.
And if you had taken the Cavs under and just watched the Cavs play like that first week of the season, you were just like, all right, you could rip up that ticket because there was just no chance that team was getting close to 31 yep. wins.
And, you know, luckily we both took the under. Looks like you locked it in. I was a little bit skittish. I think I gave a little bit too much credit to Kevin Love back then. But honestly, even if Kevin Love was playing, I don't think they're a 32-win team.
No.
No, this is a team that has 12 wins right now and might finish with like 14.
Yeah, it's really disgusting what they're on the court every single night. I mean, you mentioned Chris. But.
Yep. So we hit that Cavs under right on the head. And the other two that I feel pretty proud about, proud's not the right word. I feel like we just made the right choice, all right? Like the New York Knicks. The Knicks line was at 30.5. They have 10 wins. They have 18 straight losses. It's going to be 19 tonight. They're on pace somehow for 18 wins. I don't know what metric Basketball Reference uses to determine that they're going to win 8 games after the All-Star break. This team might go 13-69. Legitimately. Yeah. We're not just making fun of them. Like they have not won a game in like a month and a half.
No, and yeah, I mean, the Knicks, what's that? Isn't there some sort of streak they have where if you bet the under every single... If all you did was just bet the New York Knicks under every single year, I think you would be winning at like an 85% clip or something like that. So just keep that in mind for everyone that's just penciling in Kevin Durant to the Knicks or whoever to the Knicks. This is a team that has just made a living of letting people down over the past decade plus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you didn't lock that one in. I did. Do you remember why you didn't lock it in? Like, was there some reason in the back of your head that you thought this team might win 31 games?
I don't think I don't think my locks are on the cheat. The stuff that I've been highlighting is just stuff that I feel good
clerical
about.
Clerical error.
So bad about. But no, I mean, I'm just happy that I was not a sucker and set over. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the last one was the Los Angeles Lakers. I think that was the biggest sucker bet on here. They were a 35-win team last year. They add LeBron, and that number was up to 49, which for a while actually looked pretty manageable. Like before LeBron got hurt and they had just, you know, beaten the doors off Golden State in Oakland on Christmas Day, like there was discussions that this was the second-best team in the West, so it's important to keep that in mind. But they're now on pace for 39 wins. They have 28 right now, and they would have to go like 21-7 or something the rest of the way to hit that over. So we both went under, and I think, sadly, there are probably a lot of people that hit that over.
Well, and part of going under was just acknowledging that LeBron was coming off a year where he played 82 games and went deep into the playoffs again and was coming out west and was not, like, you couldn't assume he was going to play another 82 games.
I think,
so I think that was a big part of taking that under. I'm surprised that you took that under. Was that just you kind of trying to overcorrect?
Yes, I think that was one of my classic hedge my own happiness picks.
Yep.
Where if you know, I took the under. If if that hits, I feel good about it. If they go over, then that means LeBron had a great season. So I win either way. This is how I've been living with the Jaguars for the last like 20 years.
Do you feel like you're winning that one?
No, it feels worse. No, I had that on my initial rundown of topics was like, what do you think about the Lakers? But one, I knew you wouldn't want to talk about it. Two, that would be another 2 hours. Three, I didn't want to start crying on the podcast. Rock bottom, I think the Lakers hit on Tuesday night against the Hawks. Last thing on over-unders. You dubbed the Sucky Seven back in October. The Orlando Magic, the Knicks, the Cavs, the Bulls, the Hornets, the Nets, and the Hawks. Two of those teams are probably going to make the playoffs in Charlotte and Brooklyn. Do you have any regrets when it comes to the Sucky Seven? Should someone else be in there?
I think I said this maybe 3-4 weeks into the season that Washington needed to be in the Sucky Seven and the Nets needed to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I still think the Hornets belong in there. I'm sorry. I know they're going to make the playoffs. They're just – that organization is just in the worst place you could possibly be right now. So I still think they belong in the Sucky Seven.
All-Star weekend, baby.
If not necessarily in the win-loss column, just kind of in the foreseeable future of NBA success column, mm-hmm. they belong in the Sucky Seven.
Sure. Okay. Let's just run through some All-Star weekend picks, and then we'll wrap this up. Dunk contest. I imagine this is the first time you're hearing this. The people participating are John Collins, Dennis Smith, Hami Diallo, Miles Bridges. The dunk contest is the one where they judge who does the best dunks.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I don't know if you've watched.
Thank you for clarifying. I never pick the big guys, so I'm not going to pick John Collins. I think it's, you know, he's an awesome dunker.
Are you heightist?
I just think it's more aesthetically pleasing when people between the heights of like 5'10" and 6'7", I'll say 6'7" is kind of the cutoff. I don't think it looks as cool, especially like the best big man dunks are when they're dunking on people in games, and you can't recreate that obviously in the dunk contest. So a big guy flying through the air doesn't look as impressive as, you know, a wing or a guard doing it. So, I'm going to rule out John Collins. I remember being unimpressed, I think, by Dennis Smith's first go round.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
did you watch last year or no? Please be honest.
Well, I've stopped watching this contest live, but I do watch the highlights later. I feel like that way I can kind of make the best use of my time. So to me, it's between Diallo and Bridges. And, you know, I think Diallo has a higher ceiling, but I think I have more faith in Miles Bridges putting together a winning routine. So I'm going to go with Miles Bridges. But do you have those odds up at all? Is there any kind of dunk contest odds? Because if Hamidou Diallo is a big enough underdog, I would assume he might have the worst odds of the four just because he's the lesser known guy.
But so get this, John Collins is the favorite at 7-4, Dennis Smith 9-4, Miles Bridges 5-2, Hami 3-1.
Oh, so there's
kind of weird. They're all pretty close.
There's not much value there.
Yeah, Diallo's the underdog at 3-1.
If you have the underdog at 3-1, that's
this is a toss up. Yeah,
sound like sucker bets. I'm going to go Bridges. Who are you going?
I think Bridges as well. I have to cross out Diallo because of how badly he like biffed that windmill early in the season. You just can't, you know, is that going to happen again? I don't know.
I just don't. Yeah. Like the thing with Diallo is like, he's a crazy leaper.
Yeah.
He can pull off a ton of stuff, but he's also the type of guy where I wouldn't be surprised at all if he just like biffed anything. Yeah. Like at any time.
Yeah.
So
he did say a couple weeks ago that he doesn't like props, which I do love. I'm not a big prop guy. No. I will say though, like Aaron Gordon using the mascot to like hold the ball for him, like I'm fine with that. I don't like the bringing out a second backboard or jacking the rim up to 11 feet or jumping over a car. Like things like that are too gimmicky. You know, there's if you want to use someone to throw you a lob or use Steve Nash to rainbow you something off the backboard, like that's fine, but you can't go too far with that. So that in that regard, I'm expecting big things out of Diallo. But I thought Dennis Smith should have won it last year. I'm glad he came back to do it. He initially said he didn't want to do it, because he was still like spiteful about last year. But I think he'll be good. And obviously Bridges kind of gets, if there's such thing as a hometown bump in the dunk contest, you know, I think he'll maybe get that. So Bridges and Smith are the two guys I'm keeping an eye on. What about the three-point contest? 10 participants this year: Seth Curry, Steph Curry, Chris Middleton, Dirk Nowitzki, Damian Lillard, Devin Booker, Danny Green, Joe Harris, Buddy Hield, and Kemba Walker.
Well, there are a couple guys in here that I don't necessarily think should be.
Who are they? I'm going to guess Joe Harris.
Joe Harris is one. Kemba Walker is probably a bigger one.
Is he in this if it's not in Charlotte? I don't know.
No, he's not. But I'm just saying, like, who cares? You know, like, it, nobody wants to see Kemba Walker in a three-point shootout. I mean, I'd rather see Del Curry in there than Kemba Walker.
Honestly, I think I would too. That's a weird thing to say, but I agree.
That should be the hometown guy, right? He's a Charlotte guy. Bring Del out of the crowd. You know, I obviously the easy answer is Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with Devin Booker. But you know, if he was out a little too late the night before, you know, that's a wild card with going with Booker. Whereas I think you can be safe in knowing that the two Curry guys are going to mm-hmm. be well rested and well prepared. I think it'd be the funnest would be if Seth Curry won.
If it's him and Steph in the final, yeah, that'd be fun. I don't want him to do it. I'm going to go with. Well, people are going to be rooting for Dirk like crazy, right?
I think. If Dirk won, that would just be an all-time physical achievement by someone that's as broken down as he is. Like, I don't even think he could. Could he run around mm-hmm. the three-point line in 60 seconds? I don't even know.
That's a legitimate question. I don't know. I would hope they kind of give him, like, an extra 10 seconds. I don't think anyone would complain about that, right?
I heard he asked for 15 seconds, and Adam Silver said no.
Really? That's surprising. They've already made quite a few concessions. getting him in the All-Star game, for example. You'd think they'd be willing to do that. The odds have Curry as a 7-4 favorite, Booker at 9-2, Hield 6-1, Harris and Seth Curry both at 7-1. So I guess everyone else is just the field. So Devin Booker won it last year. Does that influence your pick at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think the moment's definitely not too big for him. I agree with Vegas's top three. I think Buddy Hield's a really good pick too.
Yep. Yeah, Hield is who I'm going to go with. Do you know the last guy to win back-to-back three-point shootouts? It was 07-08.
I should get this.
He's a specialty shooter, to say the least.
Capone.
Jason Capone, very good, yes. Beat a stacked field in 2008 that included Booby Gibson, Richard Hamilton, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, and Peja Stojakovic.
Wow.
I think this is going to be the most guys to ever be in this, if I'm counting correctly. Usually it's somewhere between like 6 and 8, and we got 10 this year.
Capone came along a little too early. Granted, yeah, he's a terrible defender, so maybe he would have just been too bad defensively to even play in today's game.
Maybe he never would have even made it to the league.
But, you know, I think he was like a true talent. Like, just if you're giving Capone an open look, better than 50% chance it's going in.
In 06-07, one of the years he won this thing, he shot 52% from three on 3.1 attempts per game. My God.
Yeah, I mean, he was a stud. He was insane.
He barely missed the 50-40-90 club that year. 89% from the line, 49% from the field. Terrible two-point shooter, that Capone. All right, do you have any parting thoughts? Any Valentine's Day plans tonight?
No, not really. Okay. Sorry I couldn't come into the office today. But
yeah, well, next time we're doing a podcast, I'm going to do it from your apartment, and you have to do it from here.
All right, that sounds like a deal.
Okay, yeah, I'm going ice skating tonight, so if I don't come into the office at all next week, just assume that I'm getting like stitches or my leg amputated or something.
Man, I think you might be boyfriend of the year if you're going ice skating.
Yeah, I don't like to throw that term around, you know.
Okay.
All right, have a good weekend, man.
All right, you too.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.